From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the Vatican and ETs. By the way, happy birthday to Mary Ann of San Diego, keeper of the Robert the Haunted Doll replica. Frankly, Mary Ann, I'm happy that you're having birthdays after keeping Robert all these years. My gosh, you know the story of Robert the Haunted Doll. Here's what's happening. More madness around this planet. At least 36 people killed, 147 more were injured when three suspected ISIS suicide bombers attacked Istanbul's main international airport Tuesday. The prime minister there has confirmed the death toll from the blasts at the airport there. It's just a tragic story. Again, 147 people wounded, 36 people dead. That count will go up. Parents, take heed. If you have a dresser, any kind of dresser that is not mounted to the wall, listen to this story. IKEA is recalling 29 million chests and dressers after six children were killed when the furniture toppled over and fell on them. The company said all the chests and dressers should be attached to a wall to prevent them from toppling over. IKEA said anyone who owns a chest or dresser that is not mounted to a wall should move them out of the reach from children. I've got a friend of mine in St. Louis. She and her husband have a little baby girl who did exactly this, crawled on top of a dresser, pulled it down. It was not mounted to the wall, almost crushed the kid, really damaged her face. She's going to heal up, but she could have died. 18 million Americans live in communities where the water systems are in violation of the law. Moreover, the federal agency in charge of making sure those systems are safe not only knows the issues exist, but get this, it's done very little to stop them, according to a new report. The European Parliament's first debate on the UK's vote to leave has been marked by bitter exchanges. They're all fighting there. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, OnlineColumnist.com. John, the stock market popped up a couple hundred points, so things are calming down.
As expected. I don't know if you heard the report from George Soros and Jim Rogers, who were they started the Quantum Fund back in 1973 and are some of the world's largest investors. They said that this British, the Brexit is going to crush the world stock markets and lead to a massive recession. And they're claiming that the damage has not yet happened. But I think we saw a nice rebound today in the Dow, meaning that this was kind of a crisis profit-taking session for them. But one of the things, George, that people are not getting about this is that Britain never really fit into the EU. When they started in 93, they were sort of, browbeaten into joining it. And then 2 years later, the EU adopted the Schengen Agreement that basically allowed a passport-free travel within the EU and work permits basically for anybody who is a EU member. So the British Isles, Wales, and Scotland and Britain are always have always been separate from the continent and kind of viewing the rest of the continent to some extent as barbarians. And I think that one of the things that the EU and Angela Merkel are faced with right now is the reality that they've imposed this unlimited kind of immigration of Syrian refugees, other North African refugees, on all EU member states. And I think it was just too much for the British that were paying about $13 billion per year into the EU, getting about $4.5 billion of benefits, and losing money, and then this immigration problem, I think just did a majority of the country in. And I think it was led a lot by the former London Mayor Boris Johnson, who could very well succeed David Cameron in September. He's the odds-on favorite right now to win the prime minister post. And Johnson led the way of this independence movement.
I'm glad we're not over there, John. Thanks a lot. John Curtis, OnlineColumnist.com. In a moment, the Gorilla Economist joins us to talk about some of these issues and more. For almost a decade, humans have been wandering the planet with a small computer in their hands. And to see just how attached we are to our smartphones, researchers explored in-the-moment behaviors of 94 Android users. The study found that the average person swipes, taps, pinches their display about 2,617 times a day for a grand total of 1 million times per year. Lauren Weinstein, our tech expert. When do people have the time to do all this, Lauren?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, I saw that study, and the first thing that occurred to me was, it's a pretty small sample set, to start with there. The other thing is that you can design an interface in ways that greatly increase or decrease the amount of interaction you have. So in terms of the amount of swiping you're doing and other interactions with an interface is largely controlled by the design of the interface for a particular task. All that being said, I think it's pretty clear that a lot of people are pretty obsessed.
Yes,
with their phones. I found when I first started using a smartphone, I did that a lot too. You know, when they were first coming out, because I was one of the quote early adopters unquote. Because you want to kind of check, you want to make sure you didn't miss anything, right?
Well, but you've got alarms and notifications. I've got a friend, Lauren, who looks at his phone every 2 minutes, whether anything happens or not. He's obsessed with it.
Yeah, and in fact, you just said the magic word. You said alarms and notifications. And as these systems have gotten more sophisticated in terms of push notifications and such, you would think that the requirement or the urge to keep checking your phone would be reduced because the phone can just sit there, and when there's an important event, or an unimportant event, a piece of email, an instant message request or whatever, you're going to get an alarm or a notice, and then you can act on it. You don't have to keep looking at the phone to see if it's there. It's like you're polling the phone. And yet, I think it's become kind of a comfort behavior for a lot of people.
Well, I've got a light on mine that goes off. So it's silent, but a light goes off if you get a text message or something. And you can see it. You can see it in the dark. You can see it wherever you go. I don't have to keep looking at my phone every 3 minutes.
It's funny about lights on smartphones. They go into fashion and out of fashion. For a while there, there'd be lights. You'd have tricolor lights. They could go different colors depending on different messages that were coming in and things. And then the thought was you don't need lights anymore, and then it was just a flat piece of glass. Lights started coming in again and out again. It seems like there's a lot of fashion in this. The technology has a large component of fashion in it at this level, and I think that's part of what drives people's reaction to the technology, much as they react to clothing fashion. I haven't heard many people discuss it this way, and maybe I'm off base, but I think it's a reasonable extension of other aspects of our lives. Just because it's technical doesn't mean we don't react to it in much the same way we do to other aspects of our lives that don't ostensibly involve technology.
You got it. Thanks, Lauren. Again, we're reacting to a study where people touch their smartphones, swipe them, tap them, pinches them 2,600 times. 2,600 times a day. Wow. 29-year-old woman of Oceanside, California, has been arrested for vehicular manslaughter. She's in jail. She hit a man on a sidewalk. She was in her car. The man's body went through the windshield and ended up in the front passenger seat. His severed leg crashed through the back window and landed on the trunk. She drove for a mile, parked in a cul-de-sac, and simply walked away. She was arrested a short time later. Unbelievable. And a story we have up there at coasttocoastam.com. A class of Army cadets in Bolivia forced to take drastic measures following a series of incidents involving a possessed doll tormenting the group. Kind of like Robert. According to the frightened young men, the creepy mannequin had begun moving around its area on its own at night, even attacking some of the cadets with a gun. They believe that the source of the possession is their former commander, who passed away and apparently still wishes to keep his charges battle ready. You can see that at coasttocoastam.com. I'll tell you who else is ready. V, the Gorilla Economist, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Our special guest, who was with me a few years ago, V, the Gorilla Economist. He's worked for some of the top commodity training firms and investment banks. He has contributed to private think tanks that help create investment policy. He predicted with very pinpoint accuracy the play-by-play of the Eurozone crisis. We're going to talk with him about all these things that are affecting us right now. V, welcome back.
George, it's great to be back. You know, it's been far too long, my friend, but I'm happy to be here with the Coast to Coast AM family. And my God, I mean, talk about a mess and a ball of yarn that we're going to have to be going through one string at a time. And let's see if we can connect everything and make some sense out of this nonsense.
Absolutely. V, why did the Europeans even start a European Union 40 years ago?
Great question, man. That's a fantastic question. You know, on the surface, a lot of people will think this is all about, you know, on one end of it, it's globalization. It is supposed to be the prototype for a global government. It is something that is to be emulated not only in Europe, but is to be taken over into North America with the defunct North American Union that they want to create. It's supposed to be emulated in Asia, emulated in Africa. And this was supposed to be this regional, you know, crown jewel, you know, which is basically the absolute litmus test to globalization success throughout the entire world. That was the EU. But at the same time, the underlying aspects of it, that's what a lot of people miss, George. You see, the underlying aspects of the EU, when you really look at the rudiments, the mechanisms, the infrastructure, what it is basically a wealth extraction device to impoverish the people.
Hmm.
Because globalization, George, is something that is not designed to spread freedom and liberty and prosperity, but is designed to impoverish, extract, consolidate power and wealth into the hands of the few. So in the realm of the EU being successful in that regard, it is an absolute resounding success. Because what it is a wealth extraction device. We've seen millions impoverished because of the EU. We've seen industries destroyed because of the EU. We've seen jobs gone because of the EU. And we've seen the quality of life for many Europeans fallen to absolute dismal levels because of the EU. And the funniest thing is, George, that London, specifically the city of London, that little 10-square block area within the city of London proper, which is the financial nexus of the entire world.
Oh, that's right. It's like our Wall Street, right?
Exactly. That's their equivalent of Wall Street. It's actually much bigger than Wall Street in the sense of their involvement as a global node in global finance and economics. The city of London member banks were the member banks that cleared every single major transaction in the Eurozone. Think about it. The biggest bank, George, in the Eurozone is Deutsche Bank. And who's Deutsche, and what are they filled with? Well, they're filled with almost $72 trillion worth of derivative debt, which are toxic assets that are set to explode. And then same thing with Santander, same thing with BNP, same thing with Societe Generale, same thing with Barclays. All these banks are filled to the brim with absolute toxic debt on the verge of bank failure, and the main member banks that ensures that every single one of those transactions goes through is the city of London. I mean, it was incredible, George.
Was it also a plan to pull us in and then have this one world government, this one world financial arm?
Yeah, that was exactly the plan. And the plan, you know, you mentioned it, you know, started, you know, 50 years ago or so. If you remember, in 1968, it was none other than J.P. Morgan that created Euroclear. And Euroclear is a bond, you know, facility, a bond swapping and bond trading facility that is in Brussels, Belgium. And Euroclear was designed expressly for the creation of Eurobonds. And Eurobonds became the very foundation on which the EU was created and brought to life with. And so when you look at it that way, you see that there was a very express intent and desire for both Wall Street as well as the City of London to be integrally involved in the creation of this EU superstate, their goal again. This was their baby. This was their, you know, their shining example of globalization and pluralism and multiculturalism to the rest of the world. It was to be envied by the whole entire world, and we were supposed to be dragged into it. We were supposed to emulate that very same formula right here in the U.S. And once again, George, the elitists, these globalists, have really not only miscalculated in a very, very gross way, but what they've also done, they've underestimated the power of the human spirit.
That's right.
They've underestimated the power of culture, the power of nationalism, the power of sovereignty, and the ability and the yearning for people to be free. And it's a great time to be alive, to be honest with you.
Well, it's a great fight ahead. So specifically with the European Union, what went wrong? Why did it collapse?
Great question. It collapsed because it became completely unsustainable. You know, you're creating a socialist utopia where most regulations, most industries and businesses are regulated and taxed to death, to the point that the biggest employer becomes government itself. So it is basically a parasite eating its own host. And let me tell you, with every regulation or every facet, every demographic that the EU begins to put its tentacles into, every bureaucracy that it creates, and people need to understand this, because it happens here in this country as well. When a bureaucracy is created, whether its existence is needed or not, or even feasible or not, or even makes sense or not, the main driving force of that bureaucracy, whether its objectives are obsolete and no longer needed, its main driving force becomes self-preservation. In other words, folks, there has not been a single bureaucracy that has not been created that ceases to exist. It always expands. It always wants to get bigger. So with this, you hear this ginormous sucking sound, as Ross Perot would say, but instead of jobs leaving to another foreign country, it's the talent pool, it's the resources, the jobs going to the public sector rather than the private sector. And there you have an aging population, you have all sorts of demographical issues, which puts an incredible strain on the system. It's completely unsustainable. And so the only way you sustain it is to create fraud. And how do you do that? Well, you fudge the numbers in your economy, you create fictitious investment vehicles, and you call it AAA investments, and you get people involved in a paper Ponzi scheme. And that's what this whole entire thing that was happening in the EU, George, and it's the same thing that's happening in the U.S. today,
that's
unless
right.
we correct.
And it's what happened to us back in 2007 and 2008. I just think we got caught quicker than the Europeans did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and unlike the Europeans, and I don't know if you get a chance to go to Europe, I mean, I've been there. One thing I will tell you is for most Europeans in the mainland that have lived in this socialist system, the drive to get up and do something, to create business, to be creative, to be incredibly productive is quite different from the typical American who wants to go out there and tackle the day, you know, sees life by the horns, so to speak. You don't have that same chutzpah, that gusto that you find in Americans. You would see that in the EU. You just don't quite see that maverick mentality, George.
All right, Zig. I also find it ironic that yesterday Turkey apologizes to Russia for shooting down one of its fighter jets, and then today we have this massive tragedy at the Istanbul airport.
Yeah. Yep. You know, my theory behind that is this, okay? Erdogan from Jump Street has been a Western stooge, a pawn, and a proxy puppet, okay? He has been somebody who is in what's called the Atlanticist Club. Basically, it's this, you know, Anglo-American fifth column, so to speak. You know, the bad guys, you know, so to speak, within government, specifically Western government. Now, with Erdogan, for the longest time, he was pushed into war and conflict and tension with Russia. But at the same time, there are many industrialists that are in Turkey that when the sanctions against Russia occurred, the Turks, especially the Turkish industry, Turkish tourism, Turkish agriculture, took a massive hit. They suffered greatly because of it. The Turkish Russian relations were getting ruined. At the same time that Erdogan is dropping in the polls, what does he do, George? Well, he goes for a power grab. He tries to consolidate power. He tries to take away the powers of the parliament and try to consolidate all that to himself. And yet he's been getting a ton of pushback in that regard.
Hold on, V. We're at the break. We'll come back. We're going to talk more about all of this. And then next hour, we'll take phone calls with you. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. V is with us, the guerrilla economist. V, we're talking about Turkey and Russia. How do they play out in this world economy, if at all?
Well, you know, it's a great question, man. I mean, I think the most important thing that people need to understand this whole Turkey thing is this. Let's go back about three years ago. Okay, about 3 years ago, me and a handful of other pundits, you can literally count on one hand, were writing articles about the Iranian, Turkish, Indian gold for oil trade. Okay, this trade was important, George. This was when Turkey was buying Iranian gas and India was buying Iranian gas, and they were paying for it in gold. Though they had a workaround agreement that they used in order to settle for this in gold, bypassing the U.S. dollar. Okay, that was a big no-no.
That's right.
Erdogan got slapped because of that. I mean, let's be honest here.
And it got Saddam Hussein in trouble and dead.
Bingo. Yep, and Muammar Gaddafi on top of that as well. So this was a big no-no. The problem is, you know, Turkey is a quote-unquote NATO member. Okay, so Erdogan had to turn, really turn down the rhetoric, so to speak. And you've seen a shift where, during that whole, trifecta trade that was going on, there was a move in Turkey to be more integrated to the east, especially with the new Silk Road that's being built, the new Silk Belt, the entire Eurasian economic zone development. Turkey is very integral and vital to that. Then all of a sudden, something happens somewhere. Erdogan turns into a nut job. He becomes the terrorist kingpin, fall guy du jour, where he's, taking the mantle of the creator of ISIS, the funder of ISIS, this, that, and the other. But all roads in terms of ISIS, George, leads back to Langley and the cocaine import agency, and not so much Erdogan, and he's just a patsy. Now, again, because Erdogan is, again, following Washington's tone, and with the shoot down of the Russian jet aircraft, the threatening of Russia, this, that, and the other, and then the Russian sanctions that the Turks participated in, which, again, before the commercial break, I was telling the audience that, they got creamed. Turkish industry got severely hurt because of that. And again, the industrialists, the captains of industry, the businessmen in Turkey wanted to pull towards Russia, towards the Eurasian integration, towards the new Silk Road of what, China and Russia is doing, that whole economic development plan. And then all of a sudden, Erdogan, here he goes, he apologizes one day and says, I'm sorry for the shootdown of the Russian aircraft. He's, again, Turkey's trying to warm up relationships with Russia. And then today, boom, you have this massive terrorist attack by ISIS, again, which is you look at ISIS, it's a infiltrated Western intelligence proxy group. That's what it is. So I don't find that to be coincidence at all. Because when you look at history, George, the historical position of Turkey has always been mercantilism, trade, and gold settlement. It is going to be a major component, especially with the developments that are happening in the Middle East, especially with Egypt, the development of the new Suez Canal Zone, which is a huge economic achievement and undertaking, which will connect also with the Leviathan gas fields that Israel is developing. And all of this that I just mentioned, George, are going to be connected to the new Silk Road. A few months ago, I was in a meeting, George, with leaders and developers, those who were the creators of the new Silk Road, those who were the architects of the BRICS concept, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, which technically right now it's over 100 some odd countries and growing. Okay?
That's a lot.
And the one thing they told me, I was talking to a Professor Zhu, who was a very key insider to President Xi Jinping. Okay, they went to the same college together. They're good friends. He's an insider individual. And one of the things that he spoke to me was, hey, Z, here's the deal. We invited America so many times to participate in the New Silk Road. We invited America to participate in the New Silk Belt, the new Eurasian development, and all this, and the United States has said no. Why? Why would they say no? Simple. It threatens the preeminence of the dollar as world reserve currency. It threatens the preeminence of the petrodollar and the pegging of the value of oil to the dollar. And that is something that is non-negotiable with America's current gunboat diplomacy foreign policy, George.
Let's bring this home now. Here we are, reeling from what happened in 2007, 2008, limping along, an appearance that we're getting stronger, but I'm not sure, V, what's going to happen here in the next several years? What do you see?
Well, here's what I see was going down, George. You know, in 2014, 2015, I've been doing a million and one interviews, writing many articles, and one of the things I was always highlighting on my website, roguemoney.net, is that by the end of 2015, the dollar will be undermined as a world reserve currency. And I never said the dollar's going to end, the dollar's going to implode. What I meant by undermine is this, and I made it very clear, the prestige of the dollar, the status of the dollar will be something that will be looked on in contempt. And many nations around the world will begin to seek an alternative. And that is exactly what happened. With the end of 2015, you have the Chinese launching the SIFS, the Chinese Interpayment System, which is a counter to the SWIFT, which is basically, you know, the bank wire mechanism and system that we have set up around the world. The SWIFT system is integrated with the Fedwire, meaning if you want to send, if Angola wants to send money to Australia, you'll first have to go through SWIFT, get the correct information packet. It's then cleared through the Federal Reserve Fedwire, and then Australia gets its funds. That's the way the world does banking. That's the way the world works. Well, here comes the Chinese with their own alternative. So now if you're a country that all of a sudden becomes sanctioned because you're a rogue, a terrorist nation, meaning you're a country that doesn't go along with what the globalist schemes and plans are, you no longer have to worry about your assets getting frozen, George. Now you just go right through the SIFS. That's a huge, huge news, severely underreported by the mainstream press. It was a blow to the dollar as a world reserve currency. And then all the shenanigans in 2015, George, especially towards the end of December with OPEC. OPEC coming apart at the seams, George.
Yeah.
Coming apart at the seams. Where the last OPEC meeting in Vienna in December 23rd, the head oil minister from Abu Dhabi, he said this: we are behaving more for ourselves and for the interests of our customers and less like a cartel. It is incredible. And why is that important? Well, the oil minister of Abu Dhabi said that. He's one of the biggest, you know, members in OPEC. But he's also Abu Dhabi, or the United Arab Emirates, to be exact, the UAE, is the biggest holder of Egyptian debt. And guess who's the other big member in OPEC? Is Egypt. So you have OPEC splintering, okay? And if you look at recently, there's a lot of energy deals being cut with the UAE, with Egypt, with Russia. Okay, even Israel's coming on board with this. So OPEC is another huge news, which is grossly underreported in American media, because what's more important, George, is that is Bruce Jenner transitioning and Kim Kardashian getting a bigger rear end and Justin Bieber has a new hair. That's what's more important. And it's Sunday Night Football.
What's going on with the Chinese too, V?
Well, China is doing incredible things, man. You know, we talk about China being a threat. I mean, you're hearing a lot of saber rattling. People talk about, oh, look, they're building islands in the South China Sea. Folks, let me tell you something. China, in the last, 10 years, has taken 8 islands, right? Vietnam and the Philippines, especially Vietnam, they've taken hundreds of islands. Nobody says anything. Why? Because Vietnam is a proxy for the U.S. They're in good relationships with the U.S. They're not no regional relevance or threat to the hegemonic power of the United States or the dollar in particular. But China builds some airfields on islands that are historically theirs for the last, since 600 AAD. Those islands were China's from 600 AD, George. And all of a sudden, you know, we get in a tizzy fit. Now the question becomes, why are they building those islands? Simple. The Chinese aren't stupid. They're smart. They figured out that the majority of their energy exports, George, from the Middle East to China goes through this little strait in between Malaysia and Singapore called the Strait of Malacca. And if that area, the Strait of Malacca, can easily be blockaded by the U.S. Navy. So China needs an alternative route. And to ensure their alternative route, George, they're building these islands to make sure the Chinese energy shipments goes through properly. Secondly, the New Silk Road, which takes a sea travel for trade and goods from 42 days down to 14 days. Massive. And they're laying high-speed tracks. They're, you know, many nations are involved in this project. It is incredible. So China, George, is doing something remarkable. They are expanding in world trade. They're doing extremely well economically, even with the bubbles in their stock market, right? They're doing very well economically, and they're winning the world over without firing a single shot. Versus our foreign policy, George. What's our foreign policy? It's the same idiotic foreign policy the British followed, which is the same idiotic foreign policy the Romans followed, George, which is basically we come screaming in on a Humvee, we kick down your door, we kick your dog, we beat up your wife, we eat up all the food in your refrigerator, we defecate on your carpet, get back into the car and peel out on destroying your petunias and your front property in your front yard. That's American foreign policy in a nutshell. It doesn't work because no one's buying the BS anymore. And China is, without firing a shot, is painting a picture of a wonderful alternative to this imperial, out-of-control U.S. projected hegemony.
And slow and methodical, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Extremely methodical. These guys are chess players. It is Sun Tzu, the art of war, applied to foreign policy, economics, and trade. They are winning. And unless we correct this and we begin to understand, hey, you know what? We don't need to go around the world blowing things up and having 900 military bases in over 200 countries. We don't need that. What we need to do is start developing scientists and engineers the way they do in China.
That's right.
We need to start developing a talent pool here, not just bravado, but a real genuine talent pool of educated individuals. And we could begin to become preeminent and be number one in the world the way we used to be, George.
And we've got to do it. Now, I want your thoughts, V, on the presidential election that's coming up. I mean, everybody seems to be up in arms, topsy-turvy. Yep. The Republicans, by and large, aren't happy with Donald Trump. There's problems with Hillary. I mean, do you see something dramatic unfolding at the conventions where they may not get the nomination, even though they got the delegates? There's something weird going on here.
There is something definitely weird going on here. I mean, my buddy Bix Weir, he's talked about it, and I tend to agree with him. I think there's a massive move underway to unbind many of the delegates from Trump.
How can they do that?
You know, the problem with these political parties, they can make and create rules, new regulations out of thin air at a moment's notice without any sort of warning or heads up to anyone.
I mean, there was a major, you're going to love this, V. There was a major Republican donation a couple days ago in St. Louis. George W. Bush is here. I had some friends that were there, and they're still talking about Jeb Bush popping up. It's not over for him. This is weird.
It's beyond weird. It's. You know, it's weird, but it's also to somebody like, I guess, both of us, George, it's satisfying. Because for the first time in a long time, guys like you, guys like me, who've been on the air warning about this stuff for years now, we're finally seeing the establishment knocked back on their heels. It's so bad that they're thinking about running a glue horse like Jeb Bush, somebody who barely got 2% of the vote. You know, it would be... for them to pull a sucker punch on Trump would be the greatest thing that would happen to Donald Trump, because then you'd have a absolute defection, an absolute not only defection from the Republican Party, but you'll have the absolute end to both the Democrats and the Republicans
overnight.
The end of the two-party system overnight. It'll be the end of it. And then I'll be honest with you. I mean, my friend Bix Weir said it best. He's like, B, don't discount, don't be shocked if you see a Trump-Sanders ticket. As crazy as that sounds.
That's like a Hail Mary pass, isn't it?
It really is. But you know what? you and I are living in a time now, George, where the craziest things can be possible. It's incredible.
Well, we're going to sit back and watch all this stuff unfold. It's a great time to be alive. At the same time, V, it's a difficult time. I mean, when you watch your kids and your grandkids, knowing what they have to go through in the next generation and the generation after that, what are we going to give them? What are we going to leave behind for them?
That's a great question. The greatest pivotal moment in American history is upon us. And if we have the fortitude, and I believe we do, and I believe this election cycle has really spoken to those who are awake, number one, and those who are in the establishment, number two, that there is a changing of the guard, that the tide has begun to change. If we can capture this moment, George, if we put an anti-establishment candidate like Trump in office, we can begin to start taking back this country from a presidential level, an executive level, to a local level, to a state level. We can start winning, because we are winning. We are winning the information war. We are winning the war in the battle of ideas. We are no longer, you know, captive to the narrative of these mainstream talking head pundits, George. It's our narratives. I mean, think about this, George. For years, you've been on the radio talking about this. For years, George. Finally, the ideas that we've been putting out for years, for decades, we are creating the battle space. We are creating the arena. And it's an arena that the mainstream talking heads, those who are the lapdogs for the corporate, the corporate establishment, they have no idea. They have no strategy in order to fight us in this endeavor. And we're winning the hearts and minds, George. So it's incredible what's happening.
Now, when does the madness end, V? When do we stop with these crazy bombings at airports, shootings at nightclubs, shootings at schools? And gun control is not the question, because to me, that's off the table. But when does the madness end?
I think the madness ends is this. We all know that there's not all terrorist attacks, but a great deal of them are false flags. There's some sort of coddling or handling or manipulating or ushering at some level by some handler that belongs to some alphabet agency. We all know that.
Well, when you say false flag, it's a real event set up by people who have something to gain.
Bingo. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we're seeing the death of the Western banking system. We're seeing the death of this disgusting, fraudulent system that has done nothing but destroy the wealth of hardworking people the world over, that has created the massive loss of life, that was basically the main driver for every single unfunded, unmerited war around the world, George. You know, this is the driver, and we're seeing the death of the system. And so when we're seeing the system's dying, the system's getting desperate. I mean, let's put it to you this way. You know, one of the things I said, if the Brexit happened, leading up to the Brexit, I said this. If the Brexit happens, that means the City of London has said, we're done financing Europe. There's no more money to be made. We've picked all the meat off the bones. There's nothing there. We're going to pull the rug. We're going to let the thing implode and implode onto itself. Okay? That's if they get out, you know, if they allow the Brexit.
Yep.
If they remain in, it means that there's still some more meat on the bones. There's still some more fraud to be had. There's still more chicanery to be done and more mischief to be created.
Steve, we're going to come back at the top of the hour. Hang with us. He's got a book out called Know the Truth, Know the Game. His website, roguemoney.net. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let's take some calls from you. I want you to chime in next.